welcome to the Growing Forward podcast. I'm your hostess, Bethany Latham, and I'm having conversations with inspiring humans, leaders, makers, entrepreneurs, and exceptional people who are reinventing the standard, creating community, and envisioning new horizons for humanity's tomorrow, today. Welcome to episode number 7. I am so excited to have made it all the way to episode number 7. I heard on the Bigger Pockets Money podcast, which is awesome, that if your podcast makes it all the way to 7 episodes, your overall chances of survival and success and continuation are much, much higher, like 90% higher. So, doing pretty good. Did take me almost 2 years to get here, but I'm here. We're all here together, actually, at episode number 7. And today I have the special pleasure of interviewing one of my friends, a Mr. Joachim Brunson, or for us Americans, Joachim Brunson. Hope I pronounced your name correctly in the French dialect, Joachim. You can tell me later when you hear this podcast episode. But Joachim is just a wonderful, sweet person. He's a business owner, very entrepreneurial. I've learned a lot from him personally, and I think that you all are going to have some really great takeaways from this episode today. Without further ado, Mr. Joachim Brunson, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good today. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Can you introduce yourself to our listeners and just tell us a little bit about you and your background?
My name is Joachim Brunson, and I live in Santa Fe, New Mexico, where I grew up, owner of Perspective Window Washing here in Santa Fe. Personal things. I do martial arts. Aikido. I've been doing that for about 17 years. Wow, I do cool. Sculpture and welding for fun. And I also have some land that I'm working on building a cabin and trying to get that set up as a place to live.
Awesome. I want to hear all about that. How that's going for you. You said that you grew up off grid in Santa Fe. I didn't realize you grew up in Santa Fe.
I actually grew up south of Santa Fe in a rural area. Part-time in an old coal mining town that was abandoned. It was like a abandoned coal mine turned into a ghost town. And then we grew up there in town. And when my parents separated, my dad moved out even more rural. So I lived out there. And it wasn't like fancy off-grid living. It was no running water, no electricity, off-grid living, cooking on a campfire.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
What was that like?
It's quiet. It's very quiet. You have to get familiar with your thoughts and learn how to entertain yourself.
That's good. I feel like people are not comfortable with that at all these days.
No, it takes practice. But, you know, I don't really get lonely anymore. And I don't mind quiet and I don't mind being out in the woods. I'm actually quite comfortable with it. So
when you lived with your father, you lived in this really, really simplistic way. And was that like his choice? Did he want to live that way? Or was it more of like an economic decision?
It was his choice. You know, he didn't quite have the motivation to build a house. He was running his own bakery. He's never really wanted or needed much. You know, he's got a window to watch the birds and some shelter and what he needs to eat. And that was enough for him. He was happy with that.
Wow. That is so cool. So he was running a bakery in town?
Yeah.
Okay. I was thinking you can't really run a bakery very successfully from your home if you're cooking over a fire.
No, he had a bakery in Cedar Crest, New Mexico called Swiss Bliss. Nice. Really good bakery, yeah.
Wow, so you grew up in an entrepreneurial environment.
I suppose I did. I hadn't really thought of it that way, but yeah.
And how did you get interested in starting your own business?
I had just gotten out of high school and I was looking for a job. And at the time, everything was $7.25 minimum wage. Even though I had experience working in my dad's bakery, all of the restaurants I applied to didn't consider me to have experience, probably because of my age. And they were just paying so poorly. A friend of mine told me about an ad for window washing. They were paying $9 to $12 an hour. So I applied for that job. I got it. I learned how to wash windows professionally. And then I moved back to New Mexico, tried working for another window washer. He was a drunk. And that was problematic. Mm-hmm. I tried working other various jobs, doing side hustle, working at the ski area. And I was sort of starting my own business or playing around with the idea, thinking about it, wondering about it. And I had gotten a couple short checks from the company I was working for. And the ski area closed. It was my last check of the year. Really small check. It was like 200 and supposed to be about $270. And I picked it up. I opened it. It was $200 even. I've never seen an even check. And I got so mad. I got out of my car. I went to go back inside. I knew that their office was shutting down for the season in a couple of days. I walked halfway across the street, just like irate. And I stopped and I said, "That's it. I'm never working for somebody else again." And yeah. I got back in my car and I started my own business that week.
Wow.
I was 19.
Wow. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Good for you.
Yeah. I couldn't handle it. Couldn't handle not being able to do a good job, short checks, all the other stuff. I was like, I can do this better.
For sure.
And I've been doing it for 20 years.
Wow. So how did you get started?
You know, I asked around, I figured out what the deals were. I went down to the county clerks. I talked to them. Everybody was really helpful. You have to fill out this little piece of paperwork. Everybody was super supportive. You know, I came up with a name. You did this and that and did what people told me to do. And $75 later, I had a business license. It's easier than, I mean, depending on what you're doing, but in a lot of ways, it was easier than applying for a job.
So interesting. I've heard that from other business owners. They're like, why would you not? It's so easy. I think there's this really big idea that people have that it's going to be really, really hard.
Yeah, it's just unknown. You know, there's challenges that come with running a business and having the unknown, but the act itself is not that hard. And the city and the people that work there are very helpful. They want to help you out. They want to tell you what to do. They know how to do it and just talk to them.
That's great. Yeah, I know a lot of people are really intimidated by the logistics of running a business, keeping track of invoices and scheduling and taxes and everything. How do you manage your finances and all of that?
Spreadsheets. I break everything down into percentages, and the percentage that I get paid, the percentage that my company makes, the percentage that my employees make. And I find that really helpful and consistent. And I just keep track of everything on spreadsheets because you do need to keep track of things and where it's going. I didn't do that at first and it was challenging. But now every time I get a piece of information, I punch it into my spreadsheets. And if I have to review anything or anything gets missed, I have everything I need and it's easy to access. And it's just a matter of creating those habits. I guess the hardest part in all of it was figuring out those systems. Nobody will really tell you what to do. And I was thinking about this conversation coming up and about running a business. And I was like, you know, I don't have kids, but I imagine it's a lot like having kids in the sense that if you ask somebody like, oh, what do? I'm going to have a kid. Everybody has an opinion, but there's not really any specific accurate formula for it. You have to figure out what works for you and kind of just figure it out as you go. I mean, that's just how it is. But coming up with the systems, that's challenging. You have to really think hard to come up with a system. But once you have the system, it's just a matter of maintaining it.
Mm-hmm. I track everything in QuickBooks, which is awesome because it integrates with my vehicle. So anytime I drive anywhere, it records that trip and makes deducting miles and all of that super easy. I've connected it to my credit card that I use for business purchases. Automatically, all of those charges are itemized for tax purposes, and it allows me to send invoices through the app, and people can pay me directly through the app to my business account. And that's made it really, really easy for me.
Exactly. And there's a lot of different apps and different programs. And I'd say for people to simplify and don't use 5-10 apps. Mm-hmm. Find one or three that you can balance through. I have some other self-employed friends that get really excited about all these apps and learn them and run them. And then I talk to them a few years later and they're always trying to talk me into it. And I'm too busy to spend all this time in these apps, you know? And and I talk to them a few years later and they're like, oh man, it's a nightmare. I got to get rid of all these apps and just simplify.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. Just pick one app and stick to it, or one formula and stick to it.
Yeah, I mean, modify it to meet your needs as you grow or as you change, but figure out what works for you, how you want to do it, and what you want to keep track of. And because there's a lot of different kinds of businesses that have a lot of different information that needs to be documented. You know, I'm lucky. My business is very simple, being a service. I don't have a lot of overhead. I don't have huge rent and all these products I need, like running a restaurant. You need all the food, you need all the advertisements, you need all the stuff on the tables, you need all the napkins, you need all the bathroom supplies. I don't need any of that. I just need squeegees and soap.
So tell us about your business. I know that you are really adamant about trying to be as eco-friendly as possible, which is one of the reasons I really wanted to have you on this podcast, because I think that's very admirable.
Yeah. In a lot of ways, I got lucky with, you know, I told you how I started this company and I hadn't really given it any thought at the time. I'm fortunate in the fact that my business doesn't have a lot of waste and I've been able to minimize that. I only use like 2 gallons of water a day. I switched over to a biodegradable soap to clean the windows with. I stopped using alcohol or other chemicals and I probably use about 100 squeegees a year. That's pretty much my only waste. Wow. Everything else, well, driving my vehicle, that's the most negative impact thing because I do have to be on site and I have to drive a lot. Mm-hmm. I had the clever idea of getting an electric tuk-tuk and setting that up as a business vehicle, which would be incredible. They're not yet allowed in the state of New Mexico. There's a company out of Colorado that's doing it. If I could do that and keep my costs down in that way and have a smaller vehicle, I have the smallest truck I could get, but I don't need a lot of material. I just need ladders, water, soap, squeegees, not even water. I can get that at my site. So that would be my favorite thing to do. I can't bring my ladders around on a bicycle, or I would, but that's probably my biggest concern really is my vehicle.
That would be so cool.
Yeah, I'd love to. So I was thinking about emailing them and see if we can figure it out. And it would be good advertising to have a cute.
It would. Driver. Definitely. You know? You would be the so, electric tuk-tuk window washing service.
Yeah, I would love it. It'd be excellent because they're head turners. People are like, what's that weird little vehicle? And that would be, you know, some of the best advertising I could do. Uh-huh. So, you know, hopefully I can figure that out in the next year or two. They're real common in Europe and Central South America. Pretty much all of the world, but they haven't really taken off here in New Mexico. It's something I'd love to see. You know, we have all these big cars here. It's just not necessary, especially Definitely. If you are commuting around a city, you know, that's something I'd like to see change a bit. And they've tried things here in this city. They still allow vehicles and they don't have the downtown turned into a specifically pedestrian area yet. People are like, well, why would I walk?
Well, we really like our vehicles in America.
Yes, we do.
So what are some of the, you know, challenges that you've faced running your business?
Say right now, my biggest challenge is employees. It is a big challenge. It's especially difficult for me because the field that I'm in, there's not a lot of people with experience. If I had a restaurant, I could find experienced waitstaff. But finding experienced window washer is really difficult. It takes me a long time to train somebody. And the other thing is that I'm in somebody's house. So, you know, you might be able to find a good waiter, but find a good waiter that you're going to let into the customer's home. It makes it even more challenging. So that's really tough. Taxes. Oh, taxes. You know, I hire a professional and I do stuff like that. It still bothers me. I don't like it. It's really annoying and frustrating. I keep all of the information and it's made it a lot easier over the years. I've gotten better at it, but I still don't like it.
Yeah, for sure.
I'd say those are probably the most difficult things. Dealing with the customers and the work. I've been doing it a really long time, so I've gotten really good at that. Mm-hmm. And I'm comfortable with, you know, my line of work at this point. And I don't really have any problems with my clients or upset clients anymore. I've gotten really good at working with people and doing a good job, so they're happy.
Yeah, it's really, really hard to find good employees. I found this year, especially. I think because, you know, so many people got unemployment, they are just really reluctant to work, even if they're making more money.
Yeah. I mean, I lost some of my people because, you know, they had maybe quit their other jobs and were collecting unemployment from those jobs and getting stimulus checks. And they were like, well, I'm making more money than off of unemployment than I am working for you. So I'm going to quit.
Right. Such a bizarre mentality for people to have. It makes it really hard to run a good business though, and it's so difficult to find employees.
And I've been paying people commission, and they were making around $22 an hour once they got good at what they did. Something about the commission was really difficult for people because they felt, I guess, it was inconsistent income. I wasn't really able to give people the emotional boost of a raise because it just sort of happened with them getting more efficient. It was odd to me, you know, the driving time, the this and that, there's all these like little nickel and dime things that they were concerned about. And I was like, you're still making more money in a day's work with me than you would be somewhere else. But somehow people are still uncomfortable with that. So I may have to switch to paying people less hourly just because it makes them more comfortable. You know, as somebody who runs their own business, it makes sense to me. And I've always liked jobs that paid that way because I like to work hard. But it's an interesting thing to kind of contend with where it's like, wow, you would be more comfortable if I paid you less. People don't want to think about it. I guess that's the joy of being employed, is you just show up, do your thing, walk away.
I agree though. I've always really liked any kind of commission-based work. Yeah. If you're a hard worker, it's better for you.
Yeah. I like working hard. I like getting it done as fast as I can. I want to go home. And if I can get paid the same amount and go home an hour or two early, I got other things to do. You know, I don't want to just sit around and wait for the clock to click out. I can't. That drives me insane. It's like slave labor. I feel like you're selling your life by the hour. Yeah, you ask somebody how much it's worth, they're going to give you a way higher number than what they'll actually take.
That's true. Yeah. You know, other people that I know who are business owners who have done the same kind of thing and switched from paying hourly to paying per task or by the job, they've had people just quit on them because they know that they're not going to be able to do that efficiently.
Yeah. I'm happier with it. It works for me. And I like getting off as soon as I can get off work so I can go work on my projects, go work on my land, do what I want to do, have a life outside. And I've always tried to encourage my employees to do their hobbies. I say, hey, you know, you have this thing going on in your life. Let me know how we can modify your schedule in a way that benefits your life, because life isn't just work.
Yeah. So you have so many passion projects, and I'd love to hear about your off-grid building that you're doing right now using refurbished materials.
Yeah. So I have 15 acres in a rural area, fortunately with a well on it. And I've been building out there, getting it set up. I got the water situation working, got some above ground cisterns. I realized you can't build a house without water. You don't think that a house requires water to build, but concrete requires water. And if you want a foundation on your house, which is kind of important, you need water. So don't buy land without water.
Yeah.
big mistake. I've been building a neat little A-frame. It's basically a big tent. And I've had the opportunity to rethink camping and structure and shelter, because my needs are unique. Everything for camping, tents, things like that, they're all designed to be portable. And because I own the land, my tent doesn't need to be portable. So I've built a little A-frame out there with retractable canvas walls so I can have the breeze through there. And then I can also put the canvas walls out horizontally so I have some shade structure in the summer. And I built a little wood stove to put in there. And now I have shade, shelter, and warmth, so I can stay out there, you know, most of the year, relatively comfortable.
Nice.
I'm designing a cabin. I have a friend working on the blueprints right now. I'm going to be building a small cabin, hopefully something I can Airbnb in the future. This A-frame is something, it's about 45 minutes from my house. And when I do work, I like to work for a couple of days if I can. It's a lot to load up my bed and my blankets and my coolers of food and all my stuff every time I go. And if I forget something, I got to come back into town. Mm-hmm. I lost my day. I can't finish what I went out there to do. And just mentally, it's a lot to prepare all of that stuff. So now I'm getting it just set up so where I can go out, I don't need to worry quite as much about bringing every single little thing that I need with me every time. I'm always so happy when I'm out there and it's so quiet and it's so peaceful. And yeah. I have some friends building a tiny home on the property too.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's really cool.
If you'll send me pictures of your A-frame tent, everyone would probably love to see it. It's so cool looking, and I'll be able to put them on Instagram when I publish the link for this podcast episode.
Awesome. Yeah, I'd love to show it. They're fun, creative, and hopefully elegant little structures, you know?
Mm-hmm, definitely.
First thing I built was a outhouse. And people thought I was kind of crazy, but my goal was to build an outhouse and a hot tub first. I didn't get around to the hot tub, but I was like, hey, everybody's going to be out here working. Like, these are essentials. So I built a little composting outhouse, 99% recycled materials.
Wow. Yeah, so what did you build it out of?
I built it out of wood mostly. There's some stone that I incorporated into it. I took a window crank off of an old truck, so the window rolls up and down in the outhouse when you're sitting there.
Nice.
That's fun. I got some old doors from a Japanese health spa here in town. I had a friend help me modify, so I have like nice mahogany door on the front of the outhouse that I got for free. I got some old shingles off of some of the old buildings in New Mexico or in Madrid from the old coal mining equipment and buildings and stuff. And I got a lot of the other materials from a friend of mine who works in the movie industry, and they just throw away literally buildings. They build a town and they tear the town down, throw it in a dumpster. And I was fortunate enough to be able to get to that dumpster and get a lot of materials out of there. Yeah. It was thousands of dollars worth of material free.
There needs to be some kind of network, like, or an app, something where people who want to repurpose materials can let each other know, hey, there's this huge dumpster that a movie set just threw out. It'll be picked up on Tuesday if you can come before then.
I know part of me wants that, but part of me doesn't, because I'm like, I don't want any competition. but I would love to see more of it used and so much of it thrown away. I go to the Capital Scrap here in town, the scrap yard for recycling cans and metal and things like that. And because I like to weld, a lot of those materials are useful for me. So, you know, I get so much stuff there for pennies on the dollar. I got a 16 foot long curtain awning that I can use in the cabin. Those things are like $3,000 new. I got it for $14. And there's just so much. I got a moped for my wonderful girlfriend for $24.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, I clean the carburetor and it works. So it's like, wow. You just put a little bit of effort into something. You know, I mean, they're like $1,000 new. So you can save a lot of money. She had the bright idea of hitting up some buildings before they're demolished. And she found something just the other day. And we got some huge beams that I can use for the cabin. And they were just going to throw them in the dumpster. Giant 12-inch wood beams, 10 feet long.
Wow, that's so great. I'm glad you're being able to find all these scores for your cabin.
It's awesome. You know, it takes some planning and you got to be patient and you got to shop around, and I buy stuff when I need to buy stuff, but I've gotten so into it, and I started out doing it when, you know, I was really poor, but now I'm kind of like, well, why would I spend my hard-earned money on this stuff when I can get it around town?
And you're saving it from going into a landfill.
Exactly. So, you know, at this point I'm kind of sucked into that hobby of dumpster diving and scrounging and seeing what I can find.
Nice. So with your composting toilet, what is the process that you're using for the waste management?
Right now I have about a 3-gallon bucket underneath, or maybe it's 5-gallon underneath, that I mix with wood chips. And then I have two 55-gallon drums that I turned into like churning composting composters, the 55-gallon drum style composters. Mm-hmm. So I'm just running those right now. I'd like to build something larger that I can leave for a longer period of time, like maybe with a window on the top of it so I can cook it a bit outside, because the 55-gallon drums, for now, they're working because we're not out there that much, but I think they'd fill up a lot quicker if we were out there a lot more. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's humanure, so it's not something I want to deal with very often.
Right, definitely. The eco village that I stayed at in Kenya had a huge humanure composting system going on, and they also used 55-gallon drums, and they had maybe, I mean, probably hundreds of them.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, and they would just fill them up, label them with the date, and leave them for 2 years, and then dumped them out, turned them with the like organic matter compost that was already happening on site, and it was done.
But that's intense. That's like a village worth.
Yeah. Well, it's actually like a hostel, and they do tons of events there, and it's a restaurant. So there are hundreds of people going through there every week.
And one thing they don't think about is it's not organic unless the people who use it strictly eat organic. Right. It's not organic compost.
That's true.
But if I did it again, I would do a hillside system where you have basically two wheelbarrows underneath, and you use one for 6 months, close it, and then use the other one for 6 months. And then when you switch back, you've left it for a year. Or if you could do it for longer or something like that, that would be great. But the fact that I have to pull this, 5 gallon thing out every once in a while and transfer it, not so great. If you can basically get it to compost before you ever move it. That's my advice.
So are you going to still build your hot tub?
Yeah, I want to so bad. I'd love for it to be the next thing I do. I'm starting to make progress on the cabin, but I haven't given up. I have my own design based on a rocket mass heater. So it's a wood-fired hot tub. And I think I'm going to be able to get that up to the temp in 45 minutes, which is amazing because most of those wood-fired tubs take days or hours to get up to temperature. I'm a little intimidated by this project, but I haven't given up yet.
Will you describe what your plan is?
If anybody's interested on Permies Daily, I put some diagrams of the concept, but a rocket mass heater is essentially a stove where the chimney runs horizontally without getting into too much detail. And so basically what I'm going to do is you build a fire and the fire moves along the chimney horizontally. And I'm going to have that run around the perimeter of the hot tub, the sidewalls of the hot tub. So it's going to heat the mass of the hot tub itself, which prevents the water from being cooled by the side mass of the hot tub itself. So it's kind of an internal heating system. And then I'll also incorporate into it a boiler that runs off of the fire to essentially boil the water and circulate it through the hot tub. So I'm heating the water and then I'm heating the mass that the water is contained in, all with one fire. Supposedly pretty efficient, but there's not a lot of people who have done it that way. So I have some experimentation to do.
Will it be in ground?
No, I'm going to do above ground because I want to be able to access anything if something breaks.
Sure. That sounds really amazing. I can't wait to see it. And I'll put a link to your diagram on Permies Daily in the show notes as well. So it's easy for people to go check that out.
I'm still working on the aesthetic design of it. And that's part of why I haven't finished it yet or started building it yet.
This property sounds like your primary focus right now, outside of work. How do you see that this whole project going forward?
I would like to do a bit of a glamping situation out there. I've had the property for a long time before silent retreats and rural retreats were trending. So I'm kind of happy that they're trending now. As I'm learning more and recognizing some of my mistakes that I've made as I was younger, it's important to monetize your projects if you can. Mm-hmm. I've never cared about that in my life. But now that I'm getting older and labor is a bit more difficult for me, it's like, well, if I can just make this one little tweak to it and I have an opportunity to make some money off of it, why not? So I would like to build a variety of sort of glamping structures out there that I could Airbnb or something like that, and then a small cabin, because the commute is just, like I was saying before, more driving. When I bought the property, it was kind of like, oh, great. I'm doing something great for the environment. I have land and I'm living, a rural life, but I'm driving 100 miles a day. I realized, because I had grown up around a community that did that, and everybody was like, yeah, we're doing something so great for the environment. And I looked at it and I thought, no, you're not. You're just wanting to not be a part of a city or that society. You've isolated yourself and you tell yourself you're doing something good for the environment, but you're not. You've just offset all of that by driving 100 miles every day to work. Mm-hmm. So I was like, you would be doing better for the environment if you had solar panels on a house in town and rode your bike around. And that discouraged me for a long time from doing anything up there. But now I'm kind of like, well, I could make some money renting it out when I'm not there. And I'd still have a place to go when I want to go. And if I end up in a situation where I wanted to live out there long term and didn't have to commute as often, I would. So that's kind of what I'm looking forward to, is sort of diversifying my income.
I think that's great. And it'll be really, really cool for people to be able to go out and experience living on your property and, you know, having that lifestyle and utilizing a really beautiful composting toilet, things that people aren't necessarily exposed to.
Absolutely. And, you know, so many people are curious and so many people want to try it. And people were like, oh, so intimidated, in the same way of starting a business, right? Solar power. Oh my God, so scary and this and that. Mm-hmm. And off grid and blah, blah, blah. Rent a place at one of these things, hang out with them, talk to them, check it out, you know, go for a weekend. Or, you know, I have a lot of friends that wanted to move into a rural lifestyle. So they rented a house out in a rural lifestyle and tried it that way without buying the piece of property. You might find that you really don't like it.
Yeah.
Some people do. It's dreamy, right? It is. And for mm-hmm. me, I love it. My girlfriend loves it. That's great. But not everybody I've brought out there does. It's wonderful for a night, you know, and people are like, wow, the stars are so amazing. Oh my God, it's so quiet. But like after a week, they start going a little stir crazy. Like, or if you're not mechanically inclined, like, why would you build your own house? That doesn't make sense.
Right. You're a person who really prioritizes living with as small a footprint as possible. And I'm curious to know, what is the most important to you and why is that of value?
What I would like it to be. It's funny. There's something that I want to be the most important thing to me that intellectually I realized that I wasn't doing. And intellectually I realized that I should be making my number one priority that I haven't. And this is also good advice for business owners. Time. Time is the most important thing we have, because it's the only resource we have that we will never, ever get back. Everything else can come and go. That doesn't come and go. Especially being self-employed, it's so easy to say to yourself, oh, if I put more time in, I'll make more money. I'll save money if I build a website myself instead of hiring somebody. And we do the craziest things. You spend like 2 months trying to build your website. You can hire somebody to do it in a couple of days for the amount of money that you could earn for yourself in a couple of days. So why did you just work as an amateur who probably didn't do the best job, but you want to say that you did, for pennies on the dollar, right? And you spent all of this time and effort trying to do things yourself just to save a couple of dollars when you just wasted a couple of months. So I'm trying to get out of that, you know, and thinking about ways to run a business where you have employees, you have this, and you're not spending all your time doing things that don't generate money, especially when it comes to your business, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, how many people spend all their time on social media, posting stuff, doing this? Of course, it depends on what your business is. If you're an internet influencer, then great. But if you're doing something else, like, what is the financial return on that? And how much time at the end of the year did you spend doing that? And how much money did you make off of it? Worth looking at those things. That's why I say time.
I need to really look at myself in that way.
I think we all do. You know, I have a friend who's kind of he's a financial advisor friend of mine, but he's kind of turned me on to these concepts. And I was like, oh my goodness. You know, I was like, oh, you think like such an old man. But then I'm like, wait a minute. He's 38 and about to retire. Right. I'm like, okay. I'm going to listen to what you have to say and hopefully do it too. It's not coming back.
And it's like also just trying to, you know, to spend time doing the things we enjoy. You know, there are aspects of my business that really fulfill me and that I think are really important and that I want to spend my time doing. And I'm definitely guilty of trying to take on everything that I can possibly take on instead of like delegating certain things. And it's hard too, because then a lot of those things that I am expecting myself to do, I just don't do. They get put on my to-do list day after day after day because I don't really want to do them and I don't really have to. So You know, other people will eventually. Right. Or I could delegate it to somebody who maybe actually does want to do it.
Totally. And that's the thing. If people are passionate about things that you're not. And, you know, you've started this amazing podcast, like independent from your other business. And that's amazing. And you have a lot of energy and you're willing to do it. I have a lot of energy and almost out of necessity, I need to just go all the time. Not everybody I know is like that. And so they have to be a little bit more methodical about how they do things. But I found that the more energy I put into things, the more energy I have. So I just try to go as hard as I can all the time.
Mm-hmm. I'm the same way. You know, I've always had multiple areas of passion, like plants and learning as much as I possibly can about ecology and soil biology. And you know, I'm also really passionate about business. And if I stop doing one of the areas where I'm really passionate, you know, people always tell you, you need to focus all of your energy in one place if you want to be successful there. But if I do that, I get burnt out. I need to be involved in a lot of different things that stimulate me all the time.
Yeah. I had a friend who told me, he goes, read the book One. And it's about just doing one thing, you know. And I never read the book. I just thought about it. And I found myself getting really kind of angry. And I was like, I just put my foot down in my own thoughts about it. And I said to myself, no, I'm not going to do that. That's not me. I'm not a one trick pony. I'm not going to do it. You know, I'm going to do what I want to do as many things as I can, as often as I can. And, you know, I've had to make sacrifices of hobbies and things that I like, but in the name of things I liked more, you know, I mean, no, you can't do everything, but you can die trying. Right. So, I'll take that road. That works.
We are boundless beings.
We're capable of so much.
Yeah. No one's going to define for me what my abilities are.
Yeah. Eat well, sleep well, and do your best. That's it.
Absolutely. Amen to that. So what do you think the most significant act we can individually make to contribute beneficially to the health of our communities and larger global family is?
Ooh-wee. What do I think? Wow. There's so many things. Everybody's different. What's right for one person is wrong for another. Maybe even morally. And I think kind of what I just said, do your best. Live with intent and live with purpose. And if you have a hard time finding that, just keep trying until you get it. I have friends that struggle with depression, you know, and they're like, oh, you're doing fine and this and that. I'm like, just keep trying. Keep trying until you find something you care about. Mm-hmm. And lo and behold, they have. And their lives are amazing now, you know, or at least a lot better. And I think an inspiration to other people is the best thing you can be. You know, I don't take a lot of pride in my window washing company. To me, it's a job, whatever. I'm good at it, you know, and I'm happy that my customers are happy. It's not my passion in life, but I still do my best with it. And the thing that makes me the most happy about it is the friends that I have inspired to start their own companies and do what they wanted to do. That was really cool. So if you can teach people, if you can inspire people and be a positive influence on the world around you, that's great. And that happens from being genuine to yourself. It doesn't happen from doing what other people think or want. We don't, you know, like my friend always reminds me, he goes, it's none of my business what people think of me. Just inspire, do your best. And that will inspire people. I don't tell people about what I'm doing. I don't have an Instagram page about my outhouse and all the things that I build. I just build them.
Yeah. It's going back to the time thing with that though. And I've personally tried to totally unplug from social media over the last couple months, just because it's so easy to lose your time and into that. And while I care about my friends and people I love, and I want to see pictures of them and hear what they're thinking, social media can be a weird way to connect with people, you know? So I admire people who don't have any kind of social media presence.
Yeah. And, you know, I didn't have a website for my business for the first 10 years. that's unheard of. You know, people were like, you need to have a website. I was like, no, I don't. I do a good job. My customers are happy. They tell their neighbors, they tell their friends, and I get more work. Mm-hmm. You do quality work. You know, everybody's like, oh, you have to do this, you have to do that, and social media. Nah, nah, nah. And it's like, do you really? I mean, obviously, you know, certain things, your podcast, of course, you need to have some presence in that arena because that's how people access it. For something like a local service, that's not necessary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The second landscaping company I worked for, highly successful multi-million dollar landscaping business, they didn't have a website. I was like, what? You don't have a website? You have literally no presence on social media or anything. And the man who built it just built it one client at a time, word of mouth, out of his own little pickup truck.
Word of mouth. A good job, you know? And it's funny, like I get these calls from people trying to get me on their websites and stuff, advertising platforms and whatnot. And they say, oh, we're direct marketing. I'm like, no, you're not. You call it that. That's your name for it. But no, when I wash Susan's windows and her friend comes over for tea and is like, oh my God, those windows are beautiful. Then she calls me, you know, and they're like, Andy's a really nice guy. So whatever, you know, and that works.
So what advice do you have for entrepreneurs starting out that you wish you had been given?
Ooh, I could go on and on about that. There's a couple things I want to touch on. I'd say one is save money, do it. It's easy to not put money aside for yourself. That's a big one. Learn how to say no. I tell anybody that is asking me about starting a new business, I say the first rule of business is learning how to say no. They say, what are you talking about? I was like, well, customers are going to try to get you to do things. They're going to try to get you to bring your price down. They're going to try to get you to do a 6-hour job in 2 hours. And if you say yes and you don't deliver, they're going to be mad. And if you can't deliver, don't say yes. Think really clearly before you say yes. Can I pull this off? You should be uncomfortable with how much you're charging at first, because there's going to be unexpected expenses that you don't realize. You're not taking in consideration your gas and your car insurance or this or that, or your overhead or the extra hour you had to spend doing this or the time you spend on the computer doing that. It all adds up over time. And I stopped negotiating my prices almost a decade ago because your boss doesn't try to negotiate your paycheck with you, mm-hmm. your bills and your expenses. You don't get to negotiate those. So what are you negotiating at that point? In my case, because I'm a service, I'm negotiating my time. And no, that's not negotiable. Maybe I lose a customer, but I also didn't get taken advantage of. That's fine with me, you know? And so just being really clear about that, knowing when to say no, knowing when to say yes. So that communication is really, really clear so that you do provide a good service. No surprises to your customers. I don't give them a price and then at the end, shock them with a new price. Like, don't do that. It's going to make people mad. Obviously, you know, it makes us mad when it happens to us. So don't do it. The book Profit First by Mike Malkiewicz. It's about separating all of your money into different actual bank accounts is the way that he recommends doing it. But you, all of the money your business generates, it's not yours. Don't spend it because sure. You're going to have to pay taxes at the end of the year. You're going to have to pay all of these other bills. And if you spent it because you thought you had it, you're going to be sorry at the end of the year. And I know business owners that have been in business for 30 years and still do it. And it doesn't make sense. So just separate all that stuff so you know how much money is yours and how much money isn't. And then you're not going to spend it in the wrong places. And you're going to have money to play with. Like when the tax bill comes, there's no stress. It's already paid for. The money's there. No worries. Because that can be extremely like mentally devastating, frustrating. That's what makes businesses fail. And that's what makes businesses extremely stressful. But if you just portion it out ahead of time, it's not going to be a problem. And you're probably going to make and save more money that way too. So I think that is really important.
I think that's super important. And I kind of have the tendency of going the opposite direction where I will just like won't pay myself for ages.
Right.
And I'm like, okay, that's not sustainable. You need to.
No, it's not. Yeah, the money your business generates isn't yours, but you are supposed to pay yourself. So pay yourself first and then figure out how much money your business costs to run. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it, if your business requires the owner to work for free, it's not doing well.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, how many business models require free employees?
Right, exactly.
But people are willing to do it, you know? So take those things into consideration. And when you make choices on your business, like, there was something that came up that was really fascinating to me in reading that book was, it doesn't matter if your business generates $100,000 a year or $5 million a year. If it can't afford to pay you, you're not making any money. And I see this all the time. I was really frugal, so I kind of figured it out on my own early on. People will put tons of money into their own business thinking to increase the business's overhead, but not tons of money into the business in a way that increases their own wage and salary. So are you making a decision that makes the business money, or are you making a decision that makes you money? And that's something people don't think about. They just say, oh, well, I have to do this and I have to do that, and I'm going to expand and my business is going to make more money and I'm going to have more employees. But then all those things cost money too. So you end up with nothing. It's just more stress and more work. So why would you work more for more money? I could grow my business across the state, but that wouldn't put an extra penny in my pocket because I'd have to pay everybody and I'd have so many other expenses. It would just require more time for me or more stress for me to manage the whole thing. And yeah, my business would look great on paper, but it wouldn't help my personal bank account at all. So why would I do that? Mm-hmm. If you want a big business that looks good, if you're going to sell your business, maybe do that a year or two before you sell it. Otherwise, like, think about what's going to make you money, not just the business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And money is one of those things that flows, whereas time is not.
True. And we get to manage all those things. You know, it's the pro and the con, right? You start out and you're like, I spend an extra day working on my business and I see like positive results. Next thing you know, you haven't slept in a week. So got to balance that out.
So what's the name of this book you mentioned?
It's called Profit First, Michael Wicks, I think. Fascinating book. I think every business owner should read it. I was turned on to that by a friend of mine, Aaron David, who started a business. He became a financial advisor because you look at somebody in their situation, right? You can find people who will specialize and tell you what to do with your business. You find a tax specialist, you find a this specialist, but nobody will look at the whole picture and really help you out. And he's the one who turned me on to this book. And he's the one who helped me out immensely with getting financially organized so that I could grow in a way that is sustainable. And I just wanted to mention him because when it comes to business and finances, that whole side of it, he's just been the most incredible help. And he started this business about helping people become financially stable, regardless of their situation, and reach their goals, regardless of their situation, in a realistic way, because nobody really knows how to do it. You know, people say, do this, do that. And most of those people that tell you what to do are trying to get money out of you.
Right. So completely.
You really don't want to listen to them.
I'd love to get his contact info. Maybe I can interview him about his business as well.
That would be great. I want to listen.
Wonderful. Yeah, I'll have to make that happen. So what is your required reading podcast YouTube channel for our listeners?
Profit First is definitely required reading. You know, I've read some other books that have been helpful, Strength Finders. I don't personally listen to a lot of podcasts and YouTube. I basically use it as reference for specific things I'm working on in specific moments. Mm-hmm. So I probably don't have a whole lot of recommendations. When something pops up, I'll look at it and glean what I need to from it. But I'm not really the type of person who collects a lot of that information and then over a course of time, you know, I just try to do it as I go. I'm the guy that opens the manual on how to put something together and I skim over it. And then if I run into trouble, I'll pull it out. Uh-huh. But I won't read the whole thing from beginning to end at the beginning. I only use it if I need it.
Man, I'm the opposite way.
Yeah.
I think it's probably a little bit more effective to be somewhere in the middle.
Where it's I don't throw it away.
Right. I probably don't need to read the preface and the index of every single book that I pick up, but I end up doing it anyway.
Yeah.
What song is your jam right now?
Oh, my favorite song. Right now, I've been listening to Lee Fields, and he has this song called I Still Got It. And I discovered that song on YouTube the other day. It's awesome.
Okay, sweet. I'll have to check that out. And what is one of your most favorite plants?
My favorite plant is perhaps the underappreciated geranium.
Really?
Mm-hmm. It smells so good, like dirt. It smells like rich soil. Hmm. They have pretty flowers. They're hardy. I just love them. I don't know. It's just my favorite plant. I love the way they smell. There's something about it. Yeah.
Interesting. I always, you know, you can find like scented geraniums, that classic geranium smell. I've never liked it, but I've also never accepted it as being like the smell of soil. Now I want to go smell a geranium.
Oh, yeah. And there's lemon ones, right? But I haven't smelled any of the other ones that smell like other plants, the imposters. But I have smelled the the ones that have the kind of lemony, I don't know, there's something, they kind of remind me of cucumbers too, a little bit.
Yeah. The imposter geraniums. Is there a specific color of geranium that you are thinking of?
The red one. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We don't have a lot of red plants out here where I am.
And what is an ethically based business idea or initiative that you probably won't do yourself, but that you would love to see someone else start?
Wow. so many. there's a couple I'm not going to disclose, but because I might do them.
Fair enough.
Call me if you want to. We'll work it out. let's see. You know, one that I would really like to see is people doing fresh spirulina. I took a class at the community college here in Santa Fe on how to grow spirulina, and it's incredible, amazing food source. And we grew some and we ate it, and fresh spirulina tastes completely different from dried spirulina. Dried spirulina kind of tastes like seaweed, but fresh spirulina is like butter. And it's just incredible. It's super easy to digest. It has a really high alkaline value, so it doesn't switch out with other algaes that might take over your crop or whatever. That doesn't happen. And really easy to pass FDA standards because it's very alkaline. And it's like one of those things that reproduces like 10 times or 100 times or something every day if you have the right conditions for it. And it's like $100 a pound. So I'm like, wow. You have like 10 pounds and then you have like 100 pounds at the end of the day. It's like, what? why am I not doing this?
Right. I know. I'm surprised this isn't one of the ideas you're keeping to yourself.
I can't do it where I am now in town. You know, you have to check on it every day. So what an incredible food source, sustainable thing, and so easy. It sounds to me like it could be very profitable. And it's just something you can't even get at the supermarkets is fresh spirulina.
Mm-hmm. Does it not keep very well unless it's dried?
I think that's the concept. However, in the class, basically, it's kind of like a SCOBY where you keep your little spore and you got to keep it alive and things like that. And he was like, well, if you just put in a Coke bottle and crack the lid and throw it in a dark cupboard, it'll survive for years. So wow. I'm like, well, why wouldn't you be able to do that with your product? And I know that there's like a lot of the like sauerkraut you can buy in the bags that have the little valves so they don't explode.
It's gonna be a clever packaging way to make that work.
They have packaging for live foods because it off gases pure oxygen, which is incredible. You know, maybe not so good for the plants, but really good for humans.
Yeah. Well, how can people get in touch with you?
People can get in touch with me via my personal email address, which is joachimbrunson@gmail.com, spelled joachimbrunson@gmail. And if, you know, people are interested in my services via window washing, they can find me under Perspective Window Washing.
Super. And I'll put a link to that in the show notes as well.
I personally have to check on it. I don't even know if it's functioning.
That's great. I mean, you're running a successful business and you don't even know if your website's up and running. So that's just another reminder to people not to get so caught up with the minutiae and actually just do the work that you're setting out to do, right? Thank you so much. This has been so awesome. You're such an inspiring dude. And I'm really, really grateful that you took the time to talk with me today.
Thanks, Bethany. I really am honored to be here. Have a great day.
Have a great rest of your day. Bye.
Bye.
Well, I hope you all enjoyed that episode as much as I did. And thank you again for taking time out of your day to listen to the Growing Forward podcast. I just have a little question for the listeners, if you care to throw in your opinions, because I've been asking everyone in my life who's physically near me and they don't have any useful advice. So should I rebrand this podcast? There are a couple different factors in play here. First of all, my business is Environmental Harmony, and I've been doing videos on YouTube underneath that name. So I could just make this the Environmental Harmony podcast. All right, so that's one option. It would make it a lot easier for you all to find everything that I'm offering as far as downloads, instructional videos, and videos on landscape designs that we're doing, which all kind of ties in with entrepreneurship and sustainability. I also like the name Growing Forward. However, there are a couple of different podcasts that have popped up since I started using the name, I might add, using very, very similar handles, which makes it a little bit confusing. So if you have an opinion, I'm just kind of mulling it over, trying to decide what I want to do. Thanks again for listening. And if you enjoy the show, please leave us a review or just hit the like button or stars or points, whatever counting system your chosen listening platform uses. And I hope you all have a lovely day. Thank you. Bye.